Saving on your landscaping project now at Menards. We make it easy for you to enhance your outdoor living space with the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block, ready to take home today. Build a fire pit or retaining wall with our tumbled Belgian wall blocks. On sale now. Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dreek.
Well, at least with Robin Dreek. So anyway, welcome to Hidden Killers Live. I'm Robin Dreek, filling the big chair while Tony's away on his honeymoon, but back tomorrow. Anyway, glad you're with us. Today, we're taking your questions, and joining me today is the man who makes it all work for us every day, our producer and wingman, Todd Michaels, as well as our chief of our news desk, Lisa Hale. So with that, we're going to dive right into your questions. So let's just start out with Nancy Guthrie once again, because we got some big questions in here. Anyway, we're at 6 months in and the Nancy Guthrie case still refuses to sit still. Blood on a porch, a masked man on a doorbell camera, ransom notes that turned out to be fake, except for the ones the FBI still won't rule out. Savannah Guthrie has spent half a year doing the thing no one should have to do, and that is grieving in public while still holding out hope. And the people writing in aren't asking about court dates. They're asking the question everyone's been chewing on since February. How does an 84-year-old woman just vanish from her own home in the middle of the night? And 6 months later, law enforcement still can't tell us if she's the victim of a kidnapping, a murder, or something they haven't even named yet. Joining me again, as I said, is Todd Michaels and our amazing Lisa Hale. So what do you all think of where we're starting today?
Lisa, I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, great. I get to go first. The newbie does. So when you're looking at 6 months out, the problem that I have with this entire case isn't so much that we haven't found Nancy yet, because there are so many missing people that we just have not found yet. But because of Nancy's connection to celebrity, we've been paying more attention to this case. And I think that's the hardest thing to talk about, is how this is affecting Savannah, because she has to go in, just pretend none of this is bothering her every morning, every day, in doing her job. So that's what I'm more worried about. I know eventually, even if we don't find Nancy, this case is going to drop out of the media.
The cycle?
Yeah, the cycle. The focus. And it's going to drop out, but it's still going to be with Savannah for the rest of her life, no matter what happens. And that going on and acting like nothing is happening is the hardest thing, and something that some of us who've been in broadcast can relate to.
Yeah, she's got to definitely maintain that professionalism that she does every day. And she has reps at doing this. And so it's a challenge and a struggle, but I don't think it's something that she's unfamiliar with, because, I mean, you two have been in broadcasting a long time. Sorry, I didn't mean to emphasize long time. but you know, you've covered stories that are heart-wrenching, that bring you to tears, but you still got to maintain that professionalism to keep carrying on. And so I think that's what she's relying on, is that, you know, you can disassociate to a certain degree because you have to, and she does have the reps of doing that, so she can be the professional that the audience hopes that she can be and expecting her to be. But at the same time, though, you know, she is grieving and working through the process. But, you know, Lisa, to your point, like, thousands upon thousands of people in this country, I was about to pull up the stat on it, I've done it before, but how many people aren't being covered because they're not married to a celebrity, or, you know, as we've covered in so many other cases, they're not the good looking white girl that vanishes. And so they get covered and others don't. So that is part of the news cycle. But I also think that part of this news cycle is yes, it's Savannah. Yes, it's her mom, the unusual situation and of that unto itself, but also Pima County isn't helping it as well. You know, so I think that the sheriff has become part of the news cycle as well, unfortunately. And the first question that was asked It's a challenging one, but I think it's one I wanted to ask. And that is, where's Nancy Guthrie?
Well, Robin, I mean, if you had to take that question yourself, where do you think she is?
I don't think she's with us. I don't think she's been with us for a very long time. I think that she was gone pretty early on. I think that because of the first two notes that, and I'm going to use the language the FBI did. Hopefully I got the wording exactly right. And that is, they're treating the first two notes as if they're the legit ones. And they're treating this case as if it was an abduction and kidnapping case. And that wording suggests to me that they're not locked into that. They're just treating it as if, meaning I still think that whoever did this, porch guy, and or if they had an accomplice or not, the intent was to go into this house, grab something, whether it was Nancy or something else, and profit from that gain. Along the way, a critical health issue happened, and she died as a result of either a struggle, heart attack, something, that she deceased, whether she deceased inside that house during that or afterwards, after they took her away from that house, that's what remains to be seen. But as a result of that, I would think that if there was an ability to return her, they would have returned her or left a place for her to go, especially if you were to believe the second note that was received, that they're treating as if it was a legit note, and that just expressing the regret that she died. I know I'm paraphrasing that. So you have a certain level of empathy in that, of that note. So if there was an ability to return a body in some way that they thought would be good, you think they'd leave instructions, direction? I don't know. So I think that she is unfortunately in a place in the middle of the desert somewhere. And yeah.
I tend to agree with you on that. And kind of going back to what Lisa was saying about the news cycle, I think this case has brought to light, and others as well, but this one, because of the celebrity connection that is with Savannah, I feel that this really puts to light some inadequacies in some law enforcement institutions in our country and the way things are handled. And I think a lot of us who have followed this case are learning very quickly the difference between local authorities and the FBI, how they work together. I mean, it's really been a masterclass for me learning how this all works together. Who's in charge? Who can do this? Who can't do that? Who has to ask for something else before it's done? You know, where some of the DNA was sent, all that kind of stuff. It's been very eye-opening to me. My biggest concern here, though, is going back to the number of people on a yearly basis that go missing, and we just never hear about them and we never find them again. So it's an unfortunate situation. I think there's a lot to learn about how law enforcement works, and maybe in some cases how it's not working, but also it does shed a light on missing individuals. So maybe this will spur some interest in looking into some of these other cases that are out there as well.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm going to look up that number again so we have a good stat on it. But Todd, you really emphasize something really important on this, and that is what you learned about how law enforcement operates, doesn't operate together, collaborate. I remember after 9/11 in New York, everyone was criticizing the Bureau and our lack of cooperation with CIA and sharing intelligence across all these different communities. And I remember for me, it was really befuddling to hear all that. And why? Well, because I had great, strong, healthy working relationships with everyone. And what I saw throughout my career was that those relationships and dialogues are so critical at every single level, but they're not institutional. You hope they're institutional. But a lot of times they're very, very individual. They come down to the people on the street executing and how well they're getting along. I got along exceptionally well with all our intelligence partners in New York City, whether it's CIA, MI5, MI6, you know, the British equivalents of 007s, the Canadians, the Australians, the New Zealanders, the Five Eyes, as they call. It all came down to those relationships. Matter of fact, it is such a force multiplier for law enforcement. That's why we have task force in the Bureau. because a task force brings together all the elements of state, local, and federal on a task force, so that when a mishap or some tragedy like this happens, you have all these different resources, already have relationships, you know who can call on what resources are here, you know, who can do the interviews here without a subpoena, or that they need a subpoena, who's got, you know, so you're able to really bring all these resources together because it's already pre-established relationships. Across the FBI, you have both the field office, the main field offices, which is 56 across the country, that represent the main hub in every state. And then you also have, out of those 56 field offices, you have resident agencies. And each one of those resident agencies are dispersed amongst their territories, you know, so the small little satellite offices. And the main job of the position called the SSRA, Supervisory Special Agent of the Resident Agency, they're the ones in charge. Their number one job is liaison with local law enforcement. And so, I mean, in the last office I served in, there was an instance where someone, an SSRA was removed because they were not able to maintain the relationships they needed to maintain. So they moved them. It's very, very critical, very important.
There's a question that I found very interesting online. It's from Denise on Facebook, and she said that her mother is 84 years old too, and she lives alone. The case has genuinely changed how I think about her front door. Should it? I mean, Robin, let's get your perspective on that. Is this something we should all be worrying about, or just because it's in our face now, it's a top mind for us?
I think it's, you know, and I'll get personal on this one too. I think these things are always important for us to maintain a healthy regard for life and mortality. And I say mortality because I shared with you guys last week, you know, my dad is 82 and just had a really bad fall, and he was in a hospital. He just finally made it home. Very, very bad condition. And whether it's the front door camera or having a first alert on you, because he was home alone when he fell and he was immobile, I mean, it could have gone even much worse than it was. I think it's really incumbent upon everyone, because my son lives alone and he's a Marine Corps officer. You know, I'm always worried about him. You know, I would always make sure, especially since we have the technology today, to be able to really cover our bases, to be able to maintain and monitor the friends and family and those we care deeply about. If you have the ability to do it, do it. Now, should you be super paranoid about it? No, but what we do in life every day, and it's how I do my behavioral assessments, is we look for wobbles in normal. But if you establish a normal with, say, you know, in this case, you know, she has an elderly mother, should I be worried about these things? No, you don't need to be paranoid, but what you need to do is set up a pattern of behavior where you have a reasonable expectation of what kind of communication and what kind of tempo of communication you're going to maintain with the people you love in your life. And it should be, if you have good, healthy relationships, at least a couple times a week, if they're elderly or if they're single or something like that, maybe you want to check in once a day. For example, in our family, we have a group chat that we're all on, and we say good night and good morning to everyone. Call us nuts, call us over sentimental, but we do. We check in.
I'm going to call you the Waltons, is what I'm going to call
it
you.
It is. Good night, Jim Bob. Yeah, I know. Well, not that Jim Bob, you know, because I would.
Right. That's the Duggar Jim Bob.
Not IBLP. No, none of that. But what it does is now when there's a deviation from the wobble, now there's some concern. And so here's a great example. I had been, when my dad got hospitalized, I was checking in pretty frequently, seeing how things are going. I didn't do the trip up because I'm trying to do my behavioral assessments. I'm gauging tempo, I'm gauging reactions, I'm gauging language being used by my mother. And then what happened was when they actually got home, I was getting not as fast responses. And so I got a wobble, and I'm like, uh-oh. And I came down to the fact that I was going to give it another 2 hours before I actually upped my communication. And I was going to do a little bit of a deeper dive. And so what we want to do, and again, I give these long narrative answers, for everyone listening that has someone you're concerned about in life, they're single, they're elderly, or there's some sort of issue, make sure you have, and we all do, just be aware of it. You have a pattern of regularly accepted communication behavior. That way, if there's a wobble, just don't ignore it. Test it. Do something about it. In other words, if you are expecting to get a response from a loved one, give it a little bit of reasonable time, but then dive deeper. Call a neighbor. Escalate and say, if it's going to be a text, make a phone call. If you're not doing it, then just do a sign of life call. I mean, one of the things I realized during this entire thing too is local volunteer fire department can do an awful lot, especially if they're sitting around not doing anything. You know, it's like they can help people in and out. They can do a sign, you know, a quality of life, sign of life, whatever. In other words, call someone, do something, but it, you can only know that there's a problem if you establish that pattern.
Good answer, actually. Very good answer.
Thanks.
And I think that's something that people tend to forget most of the time is that those average patterns, those patterns of your family are what you need to remember going forward. Because as you said, those little wobbles, those aberrations, I could send a reel to my sister 475 times. I'm not going to get a response. But
that's a pattern. See, it's a pattern.
That's the pattern. If she starts responding, then I'm going to get a little worried as to what's going on. But I mean, it's just you establish that pattern and you know Lisa's going to send me reels. If she stops sending me reels, something's wrong with Lisa. No, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. There's no good patterns, bad patterns, right patterns, wrong patterns. It's just patterns. Just understand what that pattern is. And I just pulled up some stats for us while you were talking, Lisa. Total elderly reported missing a year, between 100 and 120,000.
Wow.
But that includes not abductions like this, but that's all cases. Now, suspicious, unexpected, unexplained disappearances between 8,000 and 12,000, where possible foul play is suspected. Stranger abduction or home invasion style, 400 to 700. Elderly homicide with body not immediately found, 150 to 250 per year.
We had a question, and I just want to clarify this. The question was, how do we know that Nancy's family didn't have a system for how they checked on Nancy? Right. We weren't necessarily speaking about this case or Nancy's family. We were just saying, in general, what can we do on a daily basis in our lives to make sure that those around us are protected?
Yeah, because I tell you, we don't know. And I'm actually going to establish a pattern behavior that they did have that alerted people right away. So from what we know on social media and reporting, one of the patterns of behavior was that Nancy would go out to dinner with her son-in-law and daughter every Saturday, and they would a lot of times play cards afterwards. All right, so that's the pattern behavior. And the next day, she would do church, whether in person or virtually. What happened? There was a deviation. She didn't show up for that pattern behavior, and she's reported. So, I mean, granted, it wasn't that night, but it's pretty soon after. So, in other words, it wasn't that she was sitting at home and people didn't miss her for like a week or two. I mean, how long did it take Gene Hackman's family? And again, this is not a criticism, but they sat there for quite a while because there might not have been a usual pattern of behavior that they deviated from. So that's why I really think the Guthries, they did have a pattern of behavior. And that's just what we knew about in social media. We didn't know even deeper than that. Maybe Savannah reached out daily to check in on mom. So there's a lot of things. That's how we are alerted to these things earlier rather than later.
Let's hit one more question. So there's blood on the porch. This is from Tom on YouTube. He says, there's blood on the porch. The FBI is still calling this a kidnapping for ransom case. Feels like they're protecting a theory instead of chasing the evidence. Am I wrong? Robin, let's start with you.
I don't think they're protecting anything. I asked this of Jennifer Coffendeffer last Friday. I'm not completely sold like on the 80% side that this was targeted abduction. I think it was targeted for profit in some way and it went sideways. I don't think they're hiding anything. Whenever you do an investigation, you have to label it a type of investigation in order to move forward. You have to open a file because it gets classification. And that's why they're using as if it was a targeted abduction. It doesn't change anything. That my question to Jennifer was, does it change the investigative tools they have at their disposal? No, but it might change the level of cooperation they get, might change the level of attention it gets. And so they're going to label it and classify it as a certain thing at the get-go for resources, for collaboration, for statistics, believe it or not. But I don't think they're hiding anything, believe me, because I would think we'd have different leakage. I mean, the fact that we even have leakage from the FBI, supposedly, you know, through Reuters, that they don't believe any of the letters were actually legit letters, the ransom letters or the extortion letters, because Jennifer broke them down between ransom and extortion letters. If there was a different classification or reason of what that was going on, I think we would have had more leakage on that as well.
One of the things that I wanted to mention about the leakage is that I think we as Americans, we're so immersed in procedural drama when it comes to our television watching and the things that we pick up on. I think what Nancy's case is also showing us is that our way of picturing how law enforcement works and works together is absolutely fictional because of all this stuff that we've been handed. And, you know, we expect it to be as quick as we see it on TV. The murder happened, they get the DNA back, make an arrest, da-da. But it's not like that. And that's why some of this is so drawn out. It's just not like that.
It's not a 60-minute serial TV show is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We can't solve a case in 60 minutes. We can't solve
it. Dang it. Why not? Why can't we get that done?
It's not going to happen. It's not going to get solved in a week.
It's too funny like that, isn't it? But yeah, it's, I'm always amazed. Probably the most common questions I get from everyone all the time is, you know, how much like Criminal Minds is what you do every day? And dude, it's nothing like that. real life, actually, probably my, it's eye-opening to everyone to kind of see this. And we typically cover the cases that things go sideways on, but everyone always has this expectation. Again, this is that Criminal Minds effect and the movie effect that people have when looking at true crime stuff is you expect it to go like you see in the movies. It's never, ever like that. Not just with the tools and technology and speed of the cases, but the relationships. We're not just, when we're solving these cases, examining these cases, it's not just the relationships of the victim and the victim's families and those people involved. When I first do my deep dives of these cases, I'm looking at them first, but I'm also analyzing the team investigating as well, because that's going to be very telling. I mean, we've seen this so often on our show, whether it's the Koberger case, you know, it got some criticism early on, but I saw how the local law enforcement in Moscow, Idaho, was really doing a great job with the local university. And I saw the relationship between them and the kids and the ability of the kids to want to communicate with law enforcement. I said, well, there's a healthy relationship that law enforcement has. This is going to go decently enough because of that. Then you see things going sideways in other investigations, whether it's a Guthrie case, or, I mean, you pick it, Delphi. I mean, because there's a human element that exists everywhere, not just in the bad guys, but in the people covering it. I mean, you know, just look at the law enforcement of their conduct during Boston. You know, that is just abhorrent what was going on in that case. You know who I'm talking about. What's her face? With Proctor and that whole group up there.
Oh yeah. I can't think of her name either.
I know I tend to block that out of my mind, but yes, but yes, State Trooper Proctor and that whole group, you know, so that's another one. And then you also, have, Ellen, also up there, you know,
the Greenberg,
Ellen Greenberg, Greenberg. Ellen, yep. Greenberg, another one. So these things also, they're so interpersonally connected. Anyway, great questions, great discussions on that. Anyway, your thoughts and questions in the comment section of Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in, and I've been weighing in even more on these things since Tony's been out. Anyway, the links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.